This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
You run a major airline. Flying is, as we know, down. What kind of options you got? We'll ask a guy from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, today, the 14th day of December. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There may or may not be a relief bill by the end of the week. We just don't know. Depends on what Republicans in the Senate decide. As we've been telling you, millions of people are facing loss of benefits and they risk eviction in just a couple of weeks. Also paying close attention, though, airlines, which got $25 billion as part of the CARES Act back in March and are hoping for a refrain. United Airlines is one of those airlines. Scott Kirby is the CEO. Mr. Kirby, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Let me toss you the easy softball first, and if you'll pardon the pun, give me the 30,000-foot view of commercial aviation right now in this economy.
Well, it's really tough right now. We were at the tip of the spear, one of the first industries to see the impact of the coronavirus, one of the largest impacts. Our revenues, we just updated our guidance, are going to be down 70% in the fourth quarter. But as bad as that is, we've been using the Winston Churchill quote that we've perhaps reached the end of the beginning. And because of the wonderful news on vaccines, we can now see the light at the end of the tunnel.
What's your time horizon? How much longer do you think until you get back to something near normal?
Well, it really does depend on the vaccine rollout. We think we need to get 60% of the traveling public essentially vaccinated before we start getting back to normal. We've really thought all the way back to May that was going to take until towards the end of next year. I hope it happens sooner. There's certainly a lot of forecasts that the vaccine will be widely distributed well before that, and I hope those forecasts are right. But we're still planning as if it is towards the end of 2021.
Okay, so let me turn to getting out of this mess. Congress, as you know, has not been able to agree on another relief plan. What does United and what do airlines want to see out of a relief plan if it comes?
I think it really is important for the U.S. economy that Congress act. There are parts of the economy that are gangbusters right now. If you're in online distribution, if you're selling home repair goods, but there are parts that are in the most devastating depression in history. Take aviation with revenues down 70% still. And those parts of the economy need support. And if you look at aviation, we're a critical part of the infrastructure in the United States, and the recovery will be less robust if critical infrastructure is allowed to degrade. We're hoping that Congress we'll get something done, not just for aviation, but for the parts of the economy that really are suffering right now and need help.
But as you know, Mr. Kirby, airlines and United got billions of dollars in that first package. And then as soon as you could, you furloughed and laid people off. Why do you get another bite at the apple if that's what you did?
So most people thought that this would be in the rearview mirror within 6 months. That's why it was designed to cover our payroll costs during that time period, but not beyond. I think if Congress had known how long this was going to last back then, the programs would have lasted longer. And it's the reason, by the way, there's broad bipartisan, bicameral support for including aviation in any legislation that passes.
As you know, though, sir, airlines spent a huge portion. Bloomberg has it above 90% of their cash flow on stock buybacks back in the middle of this decade. You had the cash. And now you need cash. Why, again, do you have to come to the American taxpayer?
Well, look, hindsight is 2020. At United, we didn't spend anywhere close to 90% of our cash flow on share buybacks. But this pandemic was a crisis not of airlines making. It was, you know, something happening outside of our control. And that has been the reason that it's been important for the government to step in a situation like this, where there's a critical crisis that impacts the U.S. economy and some portions of the economy even more heavily than others.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go. I want to talk about business travel, which, as you more than most are well aware, is the bread and butter of airline profits these days, or has been, or was till March. There are predictions. You know, Bill Gates has said 50% is never going to come back, but, you know, take your pick on others. It's a fair bet that a lot of companies are going to see some worth in Zoom meetings instead of sending people across the country. What are you going to do as you're running United to make up for that loss in business travel? First of all, do you buy it? And then how are you going to make up for it?
The biggest answer is I don't buy it. And I recognize that my view is not the consensus. I do think it'll take a couple of years for business demand to come back. But as nice a substitute as Zoom and Teams have been during the pandemic when there's no alternative, it is nowhere close to being there in person, building relationships, having a dinner. And I think that the first time a company loses a sale to a competitor because they tried to do a sales call on Zoom and their competitor showed up in person is the last time that they will try to make sales calls on Zoom. And so I do think it'll take a couple more years for business demand to recover, but we're expecting it to fully recover.
Fair point. And this will actually be the last thing. And I apologize for the head fake earlier. But you mentioned
that's
people,
okay.
You mentioned people and being in the same room and all of that. And I want to ask you a question about you. You and I have never met. We're doing this on the phone. And you know, had times have been different, I had to come out to Chicago or wherever you would happen to be waiting out this pandemic and talk to you. But you come across in my research as a hard charging, elbows out, straight ahead kind of guy. And I wonder whether being in the actual top job at a big company like United changes you a little bit.
It absolutely changes you. You know, coming into the top job, particularly at this moment during the crisis, you know, will be the defining event of my career. It doubles down the emphasis on people because so much of what I've done, almost everything that I've done in the last 8 to 9 months has been about safety, about health, about finding out what the right policies in a really uncertain environment. So my main job is about people and taking care of people. And if I focus on that, you know, we have 100,000 great people at United Airlines, and they'll figure out how to take care of running the airline, taking care of each other and our customers.
Scott Kirby, he's the CEO of United Airlines. Mr. Kirby, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
United shares down 3% today, a little bit more, actually, because pandemic. The wider markets were mixed. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The Federal Open Market Committee meets this week. That's the part of the Federal Reserve that sets interest rates, which means a couple of things. Number one, we get to play another round of What is Jay Powell Thinking, which is always fun. Also, we get to try to predict how exactly Chair Powell is going to tell Congress that it really, really, really needs to pass a relief bill. And number three, it's going to be a reminder that we are in a global economy. The central banks in the UK and China and Japan and a bunch of other countries are meeting this week, too. And that in some of those countries, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, the recovery is going better than it is here.
A global economy is usually a multifaceted thing. But in the pandemic, a single unifying principle applies, says Cornell economist Ishwar Prasad.
Countries that have done a better job at managing the virus do seem to be doing better in terms of economic recoveries.
The evidence? Asia. China, for example, says it's largely banished coronavirus.
China's recovery seems to be well entrenched, and it's now in the position of being by far the leading contributor to what little global growth there is likely to be this year.
Contrast that with India and Russia, where there's more COVID and less recovery. That's a lot like the U.S., says Adam Posen at the Peterson Institute for International Economics.
The drag on the U.S. economy right now is really provoked by the disease.
And the lack of new relief spending. In Europe, overall, fiscal and public health policies have been more effective. The cloud on the horizon, says Columbia Law Professor Anu Bradford, the U.K. might crash out of the EU without a deal by year's end.
The economic consequences of a no deal are devastating. They are very bad for the EU, but even more so for the UK.
The US has historically been a net contributor to global recovery after economic crises. But Adam Posen at the Peterson Institute says mostly what the US is contributing this time around is instability. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Tomorrow morning and every weekday morning, the Marketplace Morning Report, David Brancaccio and the gang that gets out of bed early, telling you what you need to know to start your business day. As of today, indoor dining is once again banned in New York City, leaving those restaurants with outdoor dining, which was a whole lot more palatable during the warm weather phase of this pandemic. Big parts of the country are entering a frigid coronavirus winter, and because of that, a lot of restaurants might not make it. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra has a story of one where the owner is doing what she can.
It's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, 8 a.m., and Allison Arevalo is about to go for a run.
Going to go about 4 miles around Prospect Park, clear my head, get ready for today.
Arevalo owns a restaurant about a block from the park called Pasta Louise. It's named after her grandmother, who taught her how to cook, and serves fresh pasta topped with things like meatballs and spicy red pesto. The seating is all outdoors, under heated awnings. The restaurant's about to host an event for kids. They'll make Christmas ornaments from dried pasta and red glitter. It's 40 degrees outside.
I think it's going to warm up. We're going to have a really good day. We're going to do some crafts with the kids. Hopefully a bunch show up. And their parents buy a lot of hot chocolate and egg sandwiches.
It's been a slow weekend. Maybe because it's getting cold. Or because people stayed home, ate leftover turkey. Until 2 years ago, Arevalo owned a mac and cheese restaurant in California. She sold it, then moved to Brooklyn to be closer to her nieces after her sister died from cancer. She used the money from the sale to open Pasta Louise in July. Late Sunday morning at the restaurant, Arevalo says the Christmas ornament event went well. She hopes it's a sign of things to come.
In this neighborhood, there are so many kids, and as long as we can keep the kids coming out, we could keep their parents coming out.
On Monday, the restaurant is closed. On Tuesday, it's clear by mid-afternoon that things are not looking great.
I would say we just finished our lunch rush, but it was a really quiet Tuesday today. But we did get a lot of admin work done. So the managers and I just met, and we're planning so many cool things for December. We're putting together
like a truffle dinner event and movie nights with Parmesan popcorn and blankets at every seat. Soon after that meeting, she has to run home to watch her kids, 8-year-old Nico and 6-year-old Luca. Their school is closed.
My husband had a work meeting that he needed to be on without being disturbed. So it's another back and forth going home to the restaurant when I had so much to do and I really didn't have time to come home.
She says goodbye to the kids.
I'll see you later.
And then it's back to the restaurant again.
Bye.
Nico, Luca, and Pasta Louise. They consume her waking hours. The next morning, Arevalo records this.
It's Wednesday at 7:20 and I just got out of bed. I woke up thinking about our gift baskets. And
the restaurant is selling them for the holidays.
So, I don't know. I feel like my mind is just always kind of thinking about ways to keep people out and supporting us for the winter.
If she can't, she might have to lay off some of her staff. It's cold and windy on Wednesday. And by 1 o'clock, business is so slow that she sends one of her servers home.
This week in general has really given us a taste of what's to come in the next 2 months. And there's just no help in sight.
The rest of the day isn't much better. But as she's about to bike home, she sees some of the restaurant's regulars sitting outside, and it lifts her mood.
You know, one of them stopped me and told me to be careful because I wasn't wearing my helmet. And, you know, another guy was asking me about, you know, what are we doing for Christmas platters? Because he really likes meat and he wants a platter with more meat in it.
Things start looking up by Thursday night. The restaurant actually has a wait list. Same thing on Friday and Saturday when Arevalo records this.
It's Saturday night and I'm just walking home from the restaurant. We were packed all night tonight. We had our last reservation just walk in before I left at 9:15. People sitting out in the cold under the heaters.
The restaurant also got a ton of takeout orders. It's making her think that as long as New York doesn't ban outdoor dining, Pasta Louise can make it through December.
The real challenge is going to be January and February. But just walking in the door, excited to see my family after such a really long day.
She's just hoping to get to the other side of this thing.
Hello.
I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I've heard some pretty amazing stories.
Go on. Oh, but wait, no. First, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials finished off 184 points today, 0.6%, 29,861. The NASDAQ gained 62 points, about 0.5%, 12,440. The S&P 500 down 15, 0.4%, 36,047. 865,000 Americans passed through TSA checkpoints yesterday. It's actually down from 4 weeks ago, also down from 8 weeks ago. A year ago, though, just over 2.3 million people got on a plane. Scott Kirby's United Airlines, as I said, down about 3.4%. American Airlines fell just more than 2%. Southwest descended 1.3%. Delta Airlines, the only one actually where airlines is two words, who knew, gave up 2.5%. Bonds fell. Yield on the 10-year T-note up 0.89%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Necessity and invention, they go hand in hand, right? There's even that whole saying about it. In a crisis like this pandemic is, innovation comes pretty quick. And the wearables industry, smartwatches, fitness trackers, smart rings as well, apparently, well, it's shown some promise in early detection of COVID. The latest study out today found that those devices showed early signs of fever days before actual symptoms. Marketplace's Scott Tong has more on the public health future of wearables.
Today's findings contain early data from people who wear Oura brand smart rings on their fingers. The device measures steps and sleep, but also pulse and body temperature. Study author Benjamin Smar, a data scientist at UC San Diego, says 50 subjects developed COVID-19.
For 38 of them, they had really clear episodes of a fever associated with elevated heart rate and increased respiration rates, but before they were reporting it.
Predicting disease would be an unintended feature of the Oura device. Smartwatches and fitness trackers have also been found to provide early COVID signals, even for patients with no symptoms who can still spread it. Giorgio Quare is director of artificial intelligence at Scripps Research.
We need to identify people as early as possible before they really have a chance to spread the virus to their family, friends, or colleagues.
Wearables can also monitor social distancing. And Robert Furberg, who studies tech and public health at the nonprofit RTI International, says a whole new chapter is unfolding for this industry.
Consumer wearable device vendors, smartwatch makers, are absolutely going to get into doing more of this. There's this compelling altruistic argument, and I think people would be interested in buying these devices.
For now, different types of people who work in close quarters are trying out the early warning smart devices. Nurses, retail and casino workers, and pro athletes. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Yep, the pandemic. Yep, a recession. Yep, a zillion and one other things that are going to land on President Biden's desk come January 20th. Also, although it's often been forgotten the past couple of months amid everything, an active trade war with the second biggest economy in the world. Marketplace's Sabri Benishour reports on the Biden-China challenges.
The fundamental economic tensions between the U.S. and China are alive and well.
I've heard some pretty amazing stories.
Nicole Bivens-Collinson is president of international trade and government relations at Sandler, Travis & Rosenberg. She's a trade lawyer, so she represents a lot of U.S. companies that do business in China. There was this one client, a U.S. manufacturer.
When they tried to invest, they were promised that they would have great access to the Chinese market eventually.
But they were required to work with a Chinese partner. And there was another catch.
They were told, however, that when they initially invested, that 90% of the goods must be exported. So that's what they did. They began manufacturing, exporting 90% of the goods.
Under the impression that eventually they could sell into China.
Meanwhile, their technology, the entire factory, almost to a T, was replicated literally across the street.
The Chinese partner literally copied and pasted the technology and the factory and started selling into the Chinese market themselves.
The Chinese entities then garnered the market in China with those products that had all of the same technology from the U.S. company that had invested.
Bivens-Collinson has lots of stories like this. One company needed to hire a linguist in China to catch industrial spies trying to infiltrate the company. They aren't quite sure if the espionage is private or directed by the government. Another company's trademark and branding was just altogether ripped off. All of these complaints, though, are just symptoms of a larger, more fundamental economic dispute between the U.S. and China that a Biden administration is inheriting.
The underlying problem that we've had all along is the increasing role of the state and the Communist Party in running everything in China.
Jennifer Hillman is a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. State-owned enterprises, businesses owned by the Chinese government, account for 30% of China's GDP, by one estimate. The size of these companies and their artificial support distort markets and competition well outside of China's borders. Even private companies like Huawei have benefited from government support. In previous decades, for example, China overproduced steel and flooded international markets, undercutting production in other countries. The fear is that the same thing will happen with, say, semiconductors.
So it is becoming harder and harder for any companies to compete with these huge, wholly state-owned or wholly financed by the Chinese government, heavily subsidized companies that do not have to turn a profit, that will not go bankrupt no matter what happens to them.
President-elect Biden will inherit the Phase 1 trade deal between the U.S. and China that was signed in January. It did not touch these structural concerns, though the deal did make some improvements. For example, it opened up access for U.S. financial companies to operate in China, albeit this was something China's economy needed anyway. Doug Barry is with the U.S.-China Business Council.
So a number of our businesses, including insurance companies, banks, financial managers of one kind or another, have gone in and have found that the conditions are excellent.
It's gotten easier to export agricultural goods to China, including genetically modified crops, Barry says. But he's quick to point out the other massive issue President-elect Biden will inherit, tariffs on $350 billion worth of Chinese goods, as well as retaliatory tariffs on more than half of what the U.S. sells into China.
Those have been a tax on the U.S. consumer, costing the U.S. consumer billions of dollars, $600 or $700 on average for a U.S. household. And it's just been self-defeating.
All of that, in sum, is what President-elect Biden will be inheriting, a fraught relationship between two economic superpowers, a little bit of progress, a whole lot of tariffs, and the same big problems the U.S. was facing with China 4 years ago. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, bad news for certain teenagers in my house and untold others of all ages elsewhere. NBC Universal said today that starting in January, it's going to put the first two seasons of The Office on the free version of Peacock, its streaming service. Seasons 3 through 9, though, you're going to have to sign up for one of the paying tiers to get, to which I say, first of all, that's how they get you. The first one is always free. And also to the aforementioned teenagers in my house, you guys have seen every episode of that show like a dozen times on Netflix already, which is really the big loser in this whole thing anyway. All right, we got to go, but here is your Monday moment. Oh, economic context comes to us from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, their monthly survey of consumer expectations. Always all kinds of great data in there. Here's the one that got me. It is data, I should say, for the month of November, so maybe before the grim virus outlook for the next couple of months took hold. Anyway, here's the deal. Despite thinking their income growth is going to be flat, consumers' expectations for growth and their spending in the year to come is the highest it's been in more than 4 years. Go figure that one out. Andy Corbin, Ali Pham, Maria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios are our daily production team. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.